Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. It is good to be back in the studio. And a big thank you to Mark Holland, our producer behind the scenes, who filled in for me while we were while I was gone.
Yeah, yes. We missed you, and it was the first time I got to meet him, and a very tall gentleman.
Oh, yes.
And I've been working with him for several weeks now, months now, but you just hear the voice. You don't know. So I told him he's nothing like I pictured him to be.
I think that's the number one thing we hear in radio is, you're not exactly what I thought you'd look like. I typically get, I thought you were petite brunette or a petite blonde. And it's like, no, big, you know, I'm a tall brunette. There you go. Redhead sometimes.
No, ginger.
Ginger. Yeah, I'm a ginger. That's the best one. Oh, but it's good to be back. Had plans to go to vacation in Florida. Had some work things going on in Florida for about a week and then to extend that. And life changes. My mom passed away the day before I was to leave. And, you know, it was, you know, you're kind of surprised, but then it's like, you know, she was almost 92 and lived the most wonderful, best life. And although she was in a wheelchair for the last 15 years and wasn't able to walk and do those things, boy, was her mind quick. And she loved politics and she loved, we talked about all sorts of things. We would discuss Leading Edge Medicine every day on the way home. I talked to her every day at 1:30 on my way home from work. And now I'll have to call you guys. I'll do that for a while. But she had a wonderful life and all of her kids. And she was surrounded by her grandchildren and great grandkids that got to say how much they loved her and shared memories before she.
Glad to hear that, Lynette. Thank you for sharing.
Yes. So, but good to be back. Mark Holland was filling in. I've known Mark for, over 3 decades. So that was wonderful to have a friend here in the studio. So let's find out. I have been kind of out of touch with news and medical things happening. And Dr. Mixon, you came in this morning and we're so excited because there was a news story that you just had to share. You said it was a good news thing. And then you also had kind of a moronic was your word. Why don't we go with the good news story first?
Okay, it was a good news story, which is not exactly medical, but
that's okay. We can talk about
about a month and a half ago. There was a plane crash down in Colombia, and this was a little Cessna 203. It had a pilot, a co-pilot, a 33-year-old mother, and her 4 children on board. And the plane went down in the Amazonian jungle. They went hunting. They found the airplane, and in the airplane, the pilot, the co-pilot, and the mother were dead. The children were missing. Nobody knew where they were. They started a search and rescue operation. And my thinking when I first read that was, if these kids are not found in the first 24, 72 hours, they're dead. Mm-hmm. These are small children. There's a 13-year-old girl, a 9-year-old boy, a 4-year-old, and an 11-month-old baby.
Wow.
And baby. So these kids are out alone in the Amazon rainforest with no adults. How long can they survive?
Right.
Well, the family didn't want to give up. They apparently had some political clout, so they kept the government looking. They found the kids yesterday alive. 40 days alone in the jungle, a 13-year-old girl, her 9-year-old brother, their 4-year-old and 11-month-old, and they kept all 4 of them alive for a month and a half, 40 days alone in the jungle. And this little girl and this little boy were able to find enough roots and berries and leaves and things that they could eat and water to keep them alive for 40 days.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Absolutely
just thinking
amazing.
About it. It's just, you know, a miracle, Gary.
I mean, the predator animals, the jaguars, the things that could have killed these kids, they're helpless. They have no weapons. They have no supplies. They have no food. They have no nothing. And they managed to survive for 40 days alone in the jungle.
Yeah.
Just absolutely mind-boggling.
Miracle.
It is. It is.
Well, happy to hear that story. I wish them well. I hope they're okay.
Yeah, well,
it's a traumatic episode, but they survived it.
But they survived it. You know, they said they're malnourished. Well, malnourished. Yeah. Malnourished is a good thing. It means you're still alive.
Yeah.
You know, dead, you stop being malnourished. So, yeah, a great, great story. That was my feel-good story for the year thus far.
Oh, yes.
That really made me feel good.
Yeah. I can see a movie happening soon that will – a good movie with a good ending.
Wouldn't be shocked at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now the other thing.
The other one. The not so good.
Not so good one.
You know, the world is pretty much past COVID. We are not all worried about COVID anymore. And we now know the Center for Disease Control has finally allowed people to start correlating the data. There's a study that has now been published that has looked at every single masking and social distancing study done during the last 3 years. And the overwhelming consensus was they don't do any good. Mm. Masking and social distancing did not slow the spread of the virus. It did not prevent people from dying. All that fear mongering and all of that disruption of people's lives was to absolutely no avail.
Wow.
The doctor who did the lead on this study is just adamant. He said it was all worthless.
Wow.
Didn't help. Let people feel they were doing something, but it did no good.
Mm.
Okay. Now, the reason that this came to my mind today was I saw that the Biden White House is inviting some champion athletes from a variety of schools to come to the White House.
Yes.
But they require that anyone who is not fully vaccinated must not only wear a mask, but also stay socially distanced from everyone else because they're afraid that those healthy young athletes will kill people if they're not fully vaccinated and masked.
I didn't think anybody was asking that anymore.
No.
Not even hospitals require it anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
What on earth is that sad old man thinking? Or is he thinking?
Or not thinking. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Anyway.
I wonder how many will actually want to go.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Good news and not so good news.
Not so good news, yeah.
So,
you know, I don't move in political circles very much because, let's face it, my political philosophy is pretty simple. I believe that people who want to run their own lives stay home and run their own lives. People who want to run other people's lives seek public office. The right wants to run my life in one way. The left wants to run my life in a different way. And what they seem to all have in common is they all think they're better qualified to run my life than I am. And I disagree. I think I've done a pretty damn good job of running my life. Just stay the heck out of it, please.
That's right. You kind of know what to do.
No. But for some reason, every politician around disagrees. Except the only real politician I know that I can actually have had dinner with a few times and visit and sends me, you know, text messages is Larry Elder. Larry, of course, has never really held political office, so maybe that's why we're still friends. But he ran for governor of California and lost, as you would expect. No Republican is going to win that state again. And now he is announced he's running for president.
Oh, okay.
And my advice to Larry is raise enough money, get on the debate stage, and while you're up there, show everybody how wickedly smart you are, because Larry Elder is an incredibly smart person.
Boy, we need that right now.
Yeah, we do. We could use somebody with a functioning brain in the White House.
That answers the questions that are asked.
Yes. And doesn't hide in the basement with his mask.
No.
But what I've told Larry is get on the debate stage. Do what you have to do to get on the stage. Show everybody how smart you are. And don't say anything nasty about anybody else on the stage. Don't be critical. Don't even criticize their positions. Lay out your positions. Tell them how you would make it better.
Yeah.
Don't attack anybody else.
We need more of that.
Yeah. Yes.
I said, first of all, it'll stand out.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to attack everybody else.
Yes, say, yes. If you, be different.
You be positive. You tell them how you can help fix problems. Not only will that get you, a much better response from the public, but because you're not a national figure much, I mean, people that listen to Larry Elder know Larry Elder, but most of the country doesn't know him. If nothing else, you might get to be vice president. If you haven't attacked anybody else up there, somebody up there is going to be the candidate. He might get elected, or she might get elected, but that person might get elected and take you with them as vice president. And then 4 years as vice president, you might have a shot at president next time around.
There you go.
That's my advice to Larry.
That's a great advice.
Although he has promised me that if he does get elected president or vice president, Bandine and I can come for dinner at
the White House.
Oh, that would be so good.
Who are you taking with you?
That's right.
Ivory.
He would need his entourage. And, you know, we could probably do Leading Edge Medicine from the White House.
From the West Wing.
Yes. Oh, boy.
So Larry has promised me that if he gets elected president or vice president, I can either go to the vice president's residence or the White House with my wife for dinner.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I like that.
So we'll see. So go ahead. Go for it. Go, Larry. Go, go, go.
And what I'm hearing him say, Dr. Umat, is that we would be going too. Of course. Of course. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
I don't think I heard him say that.
No, I tell my husband that. I'm like, what I heard you say was, oh, boy. Believe it or not, this is Leading Edge Medicine this morning, but we like to catch you up on some things going on in the world and things making news as well. So thank you for that, Dr. Mixon. We're going to take a quick break and then we are back with your phone calls today. Be one of the first ones on the line. The phone lines are open.
Jerry, you're going to find out how many friends you have.
Oh, yes, you are. He's got lots of friends. Here is the phone number, 206-644-6006, taking reservations to have dinner with Dr. Mixon and the new president. Or vice president in 2024. 206-644-6006. Your questions about your health, your aging questions, diagnosis, perhaps symptoms, something you're dealing with. This is your show. We'd love to talk with you. Give us a call. Phone lines are open. 206-644-6006. We'll be right back.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone, so in love are we two.
Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. We are live in the studio on this rainy, drizzly June morning here.
It is indeed.
Oh, but you know, I love it. I love it. And all the things I've been planting and the grass is getting its good drench.
The high is supposed to only be mid-50s today.
Yeah. Why did I wear sandals?
I have my sweater.
June, totally June 10th. Have done that. June 10th.
You have your jacket. I have my sweater. It's
right.
Okay.
And all my windows open a couple days ago.
Then the sun comes out, we all complain.
Yeah. We'll take it, right?
My only complaint is the cost of the air conditioning.
Yes, I was going to say. We're watering the lawns.
I don't pay the bills at home. My husband does.
He does that. Oh, well, we are back with Leading Edge Medicine, anxious to talk with you
and
this
actually,
morning.
That's the reason I don't pay the bills. It was causing me a lot of anxiety.
I
keep thinking about, oh my God, are we making this much money? We're spending so much on this and that and that and that and that. It never ends. And I finally gave it up. I said, I can't do this.
You're the man. You do this.
There you go.
You do this. Just let me enjoy it.
I want to do that. Is he for hire? All right, we've got a phone call. Let's take that right now. We are going to talk with Howard, who is on the line. Good morning, Howard, calling in from Burien this morning. The number to call, like Howard did just now, 206-644-6006. How can we help, Howard?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Some of the supplements I've read and also I've heard Dr. Mixon talk should be taken on an empty stomach, such as the acetyl L-carnitine, L-lysine, whatever. And I think some pharmaceuticals, either. Anyway, so when you take those on an empty stomach, as soon as you start filling your stomach, it's no longer empty. So must you wait a certain amount of time between eating and the empty stomach supplements?
Not usually. Most of the diet, the word supplement is a contraction of the actual title for these. These are dietary supplements. These are compounds that are normally found in food. Mm-hmm. And all we're doing is giving you concentrated amounts of them to supplement the deficiencies in your diet. And right. So, no, the vast majority of these can be taken with food because they are actually abstracted from food to start with.
Yeah. Okay, I thought you had said one time to take certain ones on an empty stomach. Okay.
No. In fact, things like alpha-lipoic acid, I say never take it on an empty stomach. Because if it refluxes, you'll think you're going to have a heart attack and die. It really hurts if it refluxes back up the esophagus. But no, the vast majority of these are parts of food, so eat them with food.
You know, the only exceptions are that we use commonly, a prescription of levothyroxine has to be taken separately from food for 30 minutes.
But
it's not a supplement.
It's not a supplement.
The only other thing that is that I tell people, if you're taking fiber, don't take it in and around meals. You may not absorb the nutrients effectively. So take fiber away from meals.
Okay.
Okay. Also, we've talked a lot lately about nitric oxide supplements. Yeah. So if a person takes one, whether it's a chemical or a beet juice or whatever, the stuff only helps temporarily, right? It doesn't permanently help the arteries' health?
It's not a cure. It just compensates for the fact that we as older people have lost better than 90% of our nitric oxide production. By 60, you only have about 4% of what you had at 18.
Yeah. So. I just wonder if there was any way to make it better permanently, or at least for the whole day.
You need to take it for longer periods, or you need to take it frequently.
Yeah.
And then the other new product that we have started carrying, they actually say it has a longer half-life. And so what we're going to do now is have our patients take it before they come in to the for their testing and then test them a couple of hours later to see if it's still positive with the test results on our strips or not. And then when they've been taking it for a month, we'll check it again to see, is it really lasting long time for them or not? But again, remember, they take it every day. It's not like you take it and you stop it.
Is that the Neo Forte or something new that I haven't heard about?
It's something new.
Yeah, something new that we're just trying out.
Can you tell me the name, just for my own information?
Sure.
Yeah, it's Vasconox.
Okay. Is that your trademark name, or is that the generic?
No. It is the generic name. It is the name of the supplement.
It's the name of the people that make and sell it.
And we're carrying it under their name.
Commercially now.
It is.
Yeah,
okay,
We're just not sure how well it works yet.
Right.
I see.
So, I mean, it was presented at the conference and the presentation was compelling and we are going to try it. We do have it under their name and with their label and everything and we buy directly from them.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we'll see.
I'll stay tuned for the results of the trials.
and we're carrying it at the same price. We're selling the same price that they sell it at commercially. So there's no difference there.
Okay. No markup.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your call, Howard. We're going to stay in Burien. We have another call. His name is Timothy, and you know how I love big words, doctors. Let's see if I can say this right. Timothy is wanting to know about rosuvastatin calcium.
Yeah.
Did I get close?
Rosuvastatin.
Okay, that one. Did I get that right, Timothy? You had a question about it. I just wanted to pronounce it. It's a big word.
I don't know. My opinion of you doctors has declined because you can't booger up the word as much as I can.
No, they can, but I can't. No.
I'm not even going to try and spell it, but I'm going to pronounce it stuff.
Stuff.
Here's my question. Uh-huh. Recently, my doctor is a VA. They said, all your test results are great, except you're a little high in the cholesterol. And uh-huh. so she prescribed this stuff, and it's a one-a-day kind of issue. And the only reason why I'm even kind of scratching my head is I do read the cautions on the drugs. And one of the cautions is memory loss. Well, mm-hmm. how the heck are you supposed to figure out if you got memory loss if you can't remember it? You know, I mean, you know, and so I, as you were talking, we're kind of like getting along in this world. I play for folks in retirement homes, and I play steel yeah. guitar, and that's you got to use a lot of meniscus. You got to be remembering things really well. And so what do I – is there any kind of earmarks of loss of memory? Is there any big worry about this or
yes.
what have you found out it affects?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, the brand name of this, which you can probably say a lot easier, is called Crestor.
Sure.
Crestor.
Crestor.
Okie doke. Everybody you. Can say that one. Not a big deal. This drug has got a lot of side effects above and beyond memory loss. It increases the risk of diabetes, rhabdomyolysis, which is a terrible one, muscle pain, headaches, nausea, abdominal pain, and yes, oh. the much feared memory loss or fuzzy thinking. Most of the people that get memory or cognitive issues with it are well aware because they find that they just can't come up with words. They have difficulty concentrating. They describe themselves as just kind of fuzzy-headed. Okay. It doesn't sound like that particular problem is yours, but I would look at some of those more common, the muscle pain, the weakness, the abdominal pain, and keep an eye on your sugars to make sure that you don't develop diabetes because it does increase risk of diabetes to some degree. Other than that, it's a great drug, of course.
So I don't know your personal history. So the reason most cardiologists, primary care providers like statins is because it will lower their cholesterol. They believe it will lower risk for cardiovascular disease. Sometimes it does. A lot of times it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But what it will definitely do is lower your risk for stroke.
Hmm. Yep. I have no issues with blood pressure as far as I'm at 128 generally, somewhere right around there and to about 89 or something like that for a couple years out to 70. And so with respect to that, if I were to take this drug and put it on a scale and on the other side of the scale put the prospective side effects, especially that diabetes one, that makes me kind of think to chew my nails. Does it weigh out, or is it really the risks are horrendously high compared to the value?
Let me ask you a question first. Have you had a heart attack?
No.
Okay. The data...
I would suggest to you that I do have occasional, I think it's called angina.
Okay.
But it isn't, you know, it ain't like I think I should call the medics or something.
All right. Well, here's the thing. The statins are not effective at preventing first heart attacks. They just don't help. They do help prevent second heart attacks. Statistically, people that have had a heart attack and have documented cardiovascular disease have a lower risk of second heart attacks on the statins. Now, if you're having angina, though, I would count that as the equivalent of having had a heart attack because this tells me you've got cardiovascular disease with blood vessels. So you probably are a good candidate for a statin. On the other hand, testosterone lowers your risk of heart attacks more than the statins. The PDE5 inhibitors lower your risk of heart attacks better than the testosterone. All right. So in the men in my clinics, I strongly suggest that we use testosterone and PDE5 inhibitors on just about everybody.
Yeah.
Because it lowers the risk of cancer, it lowers the risk of heart attacks, it lowers the risk of dementia, it improves blood flow to the muscles so they can exercise and get stronger, and it improves their sexual function.
And for those that still need the statin, despite those two, the best outcome is with the three combined together. Mm-hmm. Testosterone, a PDE5 inhibitor, and the statin. And it allows you to get away with the lowest possible dose of the statin, therefore minimizing the side effects. And we also do nutritional analysis to minimize your risk for the side effects. Yeah.
The most compelling study on this was done on, let's see, it's 10:30. Do we have to take a break?
Yeah,
can we skip through?
We do. There it comes.
Okay. Yeah.
Hold on, don't go away. I'm going to tell you about a really fascinating study as soon as we get back from this break.
Yes. Hang on the line, okay, Timothy? And if you have a call, hey, phone lines are open. We've got room for you at 206-644-6006. Okay, we'd like to talk with you. And Timothy will continue in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We are in the studio live today taking your phone calls about your health, aging, questions about maybe a symptom or what you don't understand that your doctor was probably trying to explain to you, but you are a bit confused, or maybe something a family or loved one, family member is going through. We'd love to hear your medical questions. Give us a call for the doctors, 206-644-6006. Phone lines are open. And we have Timothy on the line. You were talking with Timothy before the break.
Yeah, Tim, there's a fascinating study published a year or so ago that looked at, I think it was 800 and some odd diabetics, the diabetic men over 60, and they were tracking to see what the all-cause mortality, how many of these people died of their cardiovascular disease. And it turned out people that got no therapy did not get a statin or testosterone or PDE5. 30% of them died of a heart attack. Mm. If they were on a statin, it had a reduction. It wasn't gigantic, but it was a reduction. It was, you know, instead of 30%, it was like 22 or 23% of them died of heart attacks eventually. If they were on testosterone, though, the testosterone by itself lowered the risk of death twice as well, twice as good as the statin. And then the people on the PDE5 inhibitors, the basically erectile disorder drugs, did a better job of lowering the death rate better than testosterone. Mm. Then they looked at the combinations. Who took two of these? Who took all three? Fascinating. People that took all three, a statin, testosterone, and an erectile disorder drug, dropped the death rate from 30% to 2%.
Wow.
Wow.
That's mind-boggling.
Yes.
Right.
That is huge.
It really is.
Will the testosterone, my wife brought up whilst we were on the break, I do have prostate cancer, and I've been watching the PSA. I'm less than 7 always, but I decided that I would watch that instead of having some kind of a miracle surgery that will wipe out 70% of my ability to be sexual.
Right.
Does the testosterone that you are suggesting cause issues with that or have some kind of issue with that?
You know, it depends on what you believe. There are theories. There is what we call the threshold theory, and I think this is probably the truth. If you have any degree of testosterone, and you have a testosterone-sensitive tumor, it's going to cause it to grow. And the only way to slow that down is to totally wipe out, to surgically or chemically castrate you and get your testosterone level to zip. That slows those androgen-sensitive tumors. But once you cross that threshold, it doesn't seem to matter if how high you go. Having more testosterone doesn't make the tumor grow faster. Okay, it either grows or it doesn't. It's an all-or-nothing sort of phenomena. What we found is that men that have been treated for their for their prostate cancer, and we basically bring their PSA down to less than 0.1. If they have no evidence of prostatic disease and their PSA is 0.1 or less, adding testosterone back into their system and giving them all the testosterone you want does not increase the risk of reoccurrence of the tumor. If you've been treated and your PSA is 0.1 or less, you have about a 5% of reoccurrence of the tumor with or without testosterone. Doesn't seem to make a difference. So when we get people that have been treated for their prostate cancer and their PSA stays down for some period like a year, we'll go ahead and give the testosterone all we want, and we just are not running into problems with it.
And urologists are okay with that because our patients have to get clearance, and urology always clears them or have no opinion on it.
That's right. So that's an issue. But if you have an active prostate cancer, can you tell me, do you know what your Gleason score is?
No, I'm sorry. I don't have that in front of me. All I've been in understanding of is that if I keep on mind of what the PSA is, and I religiously go in about every half year and have them withdraw blood to test it, and keeping it under, well, my mind is 10. I've heard 15.
Our worry is how fast the PSA is rising. If you have a Gleason 6 or 7, the cancer score goes up to 10. Gleason 6 and 7 have a 94% chance that this tumor will not grow in the next 15 years enough to threaten you. Okay.
That's exactly where I'm at. And it's been sitting there for the last, I think it's been 2 years, maybe 2.5 years since I heard this information.
How fast is your PSA rising?
It hasn't changed more than 1 point in all that time. And at that point, it went from 6.9, and the next time I checked it, it was 7.9, and then it dropped back down to 6.9 again.
That's all good news then. See, a PSA that doubles in less than a year is a bad prognostic sign. These are tumors that tend to grow fast and spread and kill people. If your tumor is going for years and is basically stable, it means your immune system has it suppressed. That's great because you're controlling it, and the odds are against you ever dying from this tumor. So that's the good news. Bad news, I would not give you testosterone, okay, because you have an active tumor. And I have no data on an active tumor with testosterone supplementation. It's just no one has ever run a study because nobody's brave enough to give these guys testosterone, and neither am I. Okay. On the other hand, I would put you on a PDE5 inhibitor because the PDE5 inhibitors do a better job of preventing cardiovascular death than either testosterone or a statin. So I would use the PDE5 inhibitor with or without your statin. And here's kind of a fascinating thing. Again, we don't know the effect on people that have an active prostate cancer, but I do have a study that says men who are on a PDE5 inhibitor have 50% less prostate cancer occurring. So the PDE5 inhibitors apparently help prevent prostate cancer. They cut the risk of prostate cancer in half. And as a consequence of knowing that it prevents half the prostate cancer out there, I wouldn't be afraid to give it to you when you do have a prostate cancer. Okay? So I'd say a PDE5 inhibitor along with your statin is probably going to lower your risk of cardiovascular disease significantly better than the statin alone. Not as good as all three of the drugs, but I don't dare use one of them on you. Okay?
Let me ask you just one more thing. Would physical exercise help out at all with the cholesterol?
Yes, and it's not just with the cholesterol. Physical exercise helps with the cardiovascular disease, and it helps with the prostate cancer. Mm. People who have a exercise problem, physical exercise enhances the immune response, and it's the immune response that puts your cancer in stasis, that keeps it from spreading, okay? Let me give you, again, I don't have the number for prostate, but breast and prostate cancer have a lot of similarities, okay? Same drugs, same causes, same everything. A woman who has a new diagnosis of breast cancer, who takes up an exercise program, cuts her risk of dying by 25%. Exercise program after the diagnosis of breast cancer, we know she's got a breast cancer, and we put her on exercise, we cut her risk of dying by 25%. Just because of the effect on the immune system.
How much are they exercising a week?
Well, again, it's vague, but these are usually elderly women with breast cancer, so they're not marathon runners. Most of them are just walking briskly or going to a gym to do what they can reasonably do.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for calling, Timothy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of your calls. Phone lines are open. We can get your question in as well, 206-644-6006. Again, 206 to call in for the radio show, 644-6006. We'll be back with John in Edmonds in just a moment. Stay right there. Welcome back. Leading Edge Medicine every Saturday morning right here. Thank you for tuning in. We are live in the studio and love taking your phone calls about your health, your questions about a loved one's diagnosis. We would love to talk with you. And Dr. Mixon, you were just talking with Timothy and you had a question.
No, it wasn't a question.
Or a comment.
It was an addition.
Okay.
There was a fascinating study way back in the 1990s that I've never seen improved on. What they did was they took a bunch of guys that had biopsy-proven prostate cancers, and half of them just got standard sort of observation while they're waiting for their surgery. The other half, over a three-month period, were put on high doses of epigallocatechin gallate. Now,
say that again.
A big one. Ooh, I like that one.
That one, right? Epigallocatechin gallate. Okay. Now I can't say it.
Okay.
ECGC.
That's right. Oh, ECGC. Okay, I've heard that. Okay. Those letters.
Which is the catechin in green tea.
Yeah.
And they put them on enough epigallocatechin gallate. I can say it now. I don't think
about it.
Anyway, they put them on enough to equal 5 cups of green tea a day. Mm. Okay, just the ECGC, enough to equal 5 cups of green tea a day. At the end of 3 months, they then did radical prostatectomies. They took the entire prostate out on everybody, measured, weighed, evaluated. The men that were on the equivalent of 5 cups of green tea a day had tumors that were 50% smaller than the men that were not treated.
Mm. Wow.
And I looked at that and said, what would have happened in 6 months? What would have happened in a year of high-dose green tea? Yeah. We know that the catechins in green tea are potent anti-cancer compounds. Mm. But I've never seen anybody follow the study up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you hear stories about people telling you they reversed their cancer or held it at where it was with a high PSA for years at a time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you always wonder.
Yes, I can tell you right now, if I ever get a prostate cancer, I'm going to be swilling green tea.
Green tea. Yeah. Swimming in it.
Wow. So many good things about green tea. Just one more.
Yeah.
Just one more?
I mean, there are many other advantages, but this one for this gentleman could change his life.
Yes.
And I think we're going to stay on this topic. We have John calling in from Edmonds this morning. Thank you for calling in, John.
Hello, John.
Hi there. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, like Timothy, well, actually worse than Timothy, I've been diagnosed with prostate cancer, Gleason score of 7 now, which a year ago, not even a year ago, was 6. Mm. So if Timothy's still listening, pay attention, because it can grow fast. And my PSA, I guess that's not absolutely an indicator of, you know, whether or not you have cancer. But I got the biopsies, and the first biopsies were negative. A year later, the biopsies, they found some Gleason 6. Then my PSA went up to 12.
From what?
Which was enough of an indicator. Went from 7 to 12. And the doctor said, okay, we need to get you in right away and get another biopsy. And then they found more cancer. And now they want me to take action. I'm kind of leaning toward the surgery versus radiation therapy, or there's some other treatments, focus, laser, thermal treatments. You guys probably know more about that.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of them out there.
Yeah. So I was interested in, you know, anything you guys can add. I just heard the EGCG,
epigallocatechin gallate. Epigallocatechin gallate. Yeah.
So it's just green tea.
It's a green tea catechin.
Right.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting studies in prostate cancer therapies with non-prescription drugs. And one is the green tea, obviously. Another one is a compound called lycopene. And the lycopene, and the lycopene studies are fascinating in a different way, because I think that it's not the lycopene itself or those cofactors. What they found is people who take basically tomato products that have been cooked, or the cells have been disrupted either with heating or with stirring or blending.
So like a sauce or a paste.
Like a sauce or a paste. Those lycopene compounds tend to kill prostate cancers so well. And so they lower your risk of the cancer growing and spreading. But when they do the test with straight lycopene itself, it doesn't work. So lycopene-containing vegetables like tomatoes that have been cooked and made a tomato paste out of, they seem to slow the growth of the tumor. But it's not just the lycopene. So there's apparently something else in that tomato paste that's doing the job, or it's a cofactor that works with the lycopene to do the job.
Right.
Because lycopene itself, purified lycopene, doesn't work. But things like tomato paste do.
Yeah.
And so I tell guys, if you got a prostate cancer, make tomato paste your new mayonnaise. You throw tomato paste in your, spread it on your sandwiches, throw it in your salads. Do every way you can think of to get that tomato paste into your system.
Right.
The only really adverse effect is if your lycopene levels get really sky high, you may get a little rooty, orangish tint to your skin. Who cares?
Here we go. Yeah.
But yeah, some people – well, anyway. Also, you know, Jerry, resveratrol and pomegranate. And in fact, I may quote Dr. Michael Greger, he's an MD. He has written a book about lifestyle and cancer. And he has a book out called How Not to Die. And he talks about cancer in that book. So you can pick it up on Amazon or anywhere, Dr. Michael Greger. And he's a proponent of a whole food plant-based lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Certainly grilled or charred meats and red meat particularly are carcinogenic.
They are indeed.
And he also talks about dairy and egg. But he also mentions green tea and is a strong proponent of it, like you mentioned, Jerry, and lycopene. And there are a few other hints in that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so lycopene, tomato paste is a goodie. Green tea is a goodie.
Yeah.
Until you mentioned it, I had forgotten about the pomegranate.
Pomegranate
is kind of fascinating. There are some studies showing that the pomegranate compounds actually do inhibit the growth of prostate cancer. Pomegranate Juice Company was using that in their advertising, and they got called down by the FDA because their juice had not actually been tested. Mm. But personally, I would drink pomegranate juice,
yeah,
too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. Why not? Watch out for the companies that mix sugar in the juice, mm-hmm. but the palm itself is useful.
Yep. Anyway, hope that helps, sir.
Well, yeah,
yes.
And sugar is not good for you, for cancer anyways. Yeah, as a side note, I did have high cholesterol. They put me on statins, mm-hmm. and then they took me off them because I changed my diet, quit eating so many steaks and more seafood. But I guess I can eat any of this stuff and probably help.
Yep, you can. All right. Thank you for the call, sir.
Thank you so much, John.
And good luck to you.
All right, we're going to take our quick break at the top of the hour here. We will be back with hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. We invite you to call in. Here is that number. We are live and the phone lines are open for you at 206-644-6006. We have room for you. We'll be right back. Stay right there.